The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. Our guest today in the studio is Nancy Grill, who is the Executive Director of the Huron County Farm Service Agency office. The office is up and running and kind of in a little state of, what's coming up next, because we still don't have a farm bill, so thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here. Back from our paid vacation.
Courtesy of no budget in Washington.
Courtesy of no budget. But
have you caught up? Because, you know, you always have things to do in the office, and 2 weeks is a lot of work to catch up on.
Right, yeah, so the amount of work, of course, didn't change. It just gave us a kind of a smaller window to get it done before the end of the year. So we're working steadily on that and making sure that there aren't really any interruptions to service and everything is still going pretty smoothly. And they are. The staff is doing an excellent job.
Now, I imagine the quandary is we don't have a farm bill. What do we do? Are we going to continue on with the programs we've had until they decide what to do, or what happens? Because first of the year is coming up, and I believe that was the deadline for the extension on the old one.
That's correct. So the really frustrating thing about this year is that we were actually living in a one-year extension of the last farm bill. So we were expecting that this should have been done well before this period, certainly last year. So we had a one-year extension, and we continued on with direct payments and some of our conservation programs. But after January the 1st, we were really expecting that we'd have a farm bill by now, but that's not proven to be the case. So after January 1st, we revert back to the 1949 farm bill, which involves parity and $7 and $8 milk stories that you've been hearing in the news. But what we're looking for is a passage of the farm bill in the middle of January. And since it would take USDA a few weeks to implement the rules, there actually will be a seamless transition from this one-year extension into, hopefully, a new farm bill.
So we're going to go back to having programs for the Dust Bowl? I mean, that's about the era, isn't it?
Essentially, yeah. No, we're all getting out the history books to figure exactly what the agency was founded on, what we were created to do, and how passage of a farm bill might cause some interesting changes in the next couple of weeks. But again, we're looking for a new farm bill and expecting passage in the middle of January.
Okay. In the meantime, how do you plan? I mean, you have to try and think ahead without knowing what's coming ahead.
And that's the challenge that I think a lot of the farmers in the area are facing as well. So as you're looking at your tax situation for 2013 going, working on, you know, figuring out what your operation is going to look like, there's a very real possibility that direct payments will not be in the new farm bill, and we will end up with $5 million less in our local economy next year if the farm bill programs aren't reauthorized the way that they've been in the past.
And basically, what do farmers do? Because they like to plan ahead. They need to know what's coming up. They make their decisions as to how much of this I'm going to plant, how much of that I'm going to plant, and, you know, it's all kind of up in the air still.
Well, so this year we had a new rule that required farmers to report wheat and hay in the fall rather than in June. And so a lot of farmers were calling and saying, look, if I'm not going to get a direct payment from your agency, why would I come in and report my crops? And what we've been telling is we don't know what's going to be in the next farm bill. There's still a lot of uncertainty. And in the future, even if direct payments do go away, crop insurance rules may change. So there's a big push to move from government payments to crop insurance so that farmers are taking on some of the responsibility for managing risk on their farming operations. So in the future, even if there is that change, there still may be those USDA rules in effect. So within my agency, we expect that if we lose direct payments, we'll still have to handle wetland violations, because in one of the proposed versions of the farm bill that's in the Senate version, you'd actually still be required to comply with USDA regulations as far as not destroying wetlands, protecting land that could potentially be very highly erodible, and that would be required in order to be eligible for crop insurance. So that's a change that we may see here in January. And so, yeah, farmers have a lot of uncertainty as we don't know what the farm programs are going to be for next year. There's a lot of excitement over the fact that, negative excitement to the extent that commodity prices are starting to come down. See, we've written a farm bill based on the fact that crop prices have been very high, so perhaps farmers haven't needed the same level of support that they've received in the past. But now that commodity prices are softening, we're getting back into the traditional programs, you know, talking about price support, talking about commodity programs, and this is what I think we'll be doing a lot of in 2014.
Now, you were mentioning before the show that it is important for people to remember that, you don't just go out there and chop down all the trees on your land because, frankly, again, you're putting yourself in a bad position if you want this crop insurance and any other programs that might be available.
Right, and again, if that ends up being part of the farm bill, so in order to be eligible for crop insurance, you would have to comply with USDA rules. Now, that's proposed, so that has not made it into the final version of the farm bill. A lot of what we've all been hearing in the agricultural community still has a few question marks, but if that were the case, similarly to not being eligible for USDA programs, you wouldn't be eligible for your crop insurance either, because of course that's underwritten by the federal government as well.
But that doesn't seem to be one of the big sticking points in the farm bill that has been under discussion. That seems to be something that that may just go through as written, and there's other things they're debating. So, you might want to count on that at this point.
Well, and right now we're talking a lot about dairy pricing, because in our office, one of the large programs that we did, a couple $1 million a year in price supports, when milk fell below a certain level, the Department of Agriculture would ensure that farmers received a minimum price for a set amount of production. So we basically gave farmers the equivalent of a 150 cow herd average, guaranteeing that they'd receive at least in the high $17 range per hundredweight on milk. Now, for the larger producers that exceeded that production, they took the risk that prices would be low. But in that production level at about 150 cows, 2.7, 2.9 million pounds of production a year.
More typical family farms rather than large CAFOs.
A smaller size. What we're looking at in the future, that price support program may not exist. So what's been making the news mostly with the farm bill has been kind of a lot of confusion and concern over what a new dairy program pricing would look like, and if that would involve such things that we haven't dealt with in the past, like quotas or different marketing schemes that would be a little bit different from what we've had in the past. That's the stuff that's really been making the news and kind of more of a hot button issue that we're not meant to be talking too much about here on the local level.
Well, because again, nobody really knows where it's going and how long this old farm bill is going to be in effect before they come up with something.
That's exactly right.
I mean, that could change, like you think, hopefully in a couple of weeks after the first of the year. Or we could be talking about this again at the end of next year, that we still don't have one.
We haven't moved any files in the office, so we're looking at the very real possibility that if something confusing happens with Congress, which does happen from time to time.
No.
What we may have is, and again, not projecting it, but you could always even have another one-year extension. So direct program would still be in effect. Our commodity programs would stay the same. Conservation would stay the same. Usually we'll have 1 or 2 years of extension on farm bills because it just takes that long to negotiate a piece of legislation that is very complex and touches the lives of millions of Americans. Again,
and there's a lot of commodities that come under this. And,
sure.
People only think of the ones they are dealing with on their own local farm, but there's crops across the country that also get involved in this that we don't even think about that also have to be taken into account.
And what we also have to keep in mind is that the ag title, the portion of the farm bill that has to do directly with farmers, is a relatively small portion of the overall farm bill. A lot of what that piece of legislation entails is actually the food title, which is food assistance and nutrition assistance for Americans across the country. And of course, that's been in the news as well. And fortunately, I don't have to deal with that too much on the local level, simply because it doesn't directly impact the agricultural programs that my office handles.
How is the office going? I mean, a lot of cutbacks in the state and in the federal government. Is the office, like everything else, shrinking?
Absolutely. And what I think everyone in the area needs to be aware of is our local budget has been cut 20-25% in the last 3 years. So we have no temporary assistance. We have no field workers. We have no travel. Aside from the government vehicles, anything that's reimbursed above and beyond that doesn't exist anymore. So even our supplies, all of our budgets have been cut across the board, and that's appropriate. You know, that's not anything to complain about. It's probably,
it's not like you're singled out.
No, certainly not. And across the agency, Huron County has been very fortunate that we've remained fully staffed. But across the agency, there are a lot of counties in Michigan that no longer have directors, don't have a fully staffed office. So counties are sharing resources, pooling resources. Directors are taking multiple counties. And again, you know, fortunately, from a professional standpoint, Huron County is wonderfully diverse with agriculture. And it's also surrounded by water on three sides. So it keeps me from having to commute in too many distances to help out with other offices. And especially since we're such a high workload office as well, we've been more protected, I think, than maybe other counties across the state, simply because our staffing has been more stable and we've been able to cut our budget without reducing full-time staff.
But that still means the staff you do have has to make up for the part-time that you aren't going to have, and these field workers that aren't out there doing their thing, so they end up with more hats to deal with as well. Do you rely more than on like satellite and stuff to find out compliancy if you don't have people out there doing the checks?
Right, so in the past, you know, we would send technicians out and they would do the work of making sure that farmers were in compliance. Now what we do a lot of is we do get yearly updates on our imagery. So when we're looking at CRP fields or set-aside fields, now we don't have to drive out and see whether or not someone has planted corn in set-aside acres. Now we can see it on satellites, whether or not there are row crops planted in areas that are meant to not be planted. So yeah, technology has helped a little bit, and certainly a lot of our programs are moving over to the internet. It's not an easy transfer over, but now these systems work a little bit more seamlessly. It causes us to save a little bit more time and have programs that also, they just look better. They're better resources for farmers, you know, more readable crop reports, better maps of their farms. And so we're bringing some resources into the area that are great for area farmers.
Well, terrific. You were also mentioning before we did the show, that there are a couple of programs that will not be affected because they are with different types of legislation. They aren't part of the farm bill, but they are other things Congress has passed in the past, like bin loans, commodity loans. These things are still in effect, and people may be looking to use them more.
Absolutely. So this year, what we're seeing in the past is farmers have had high commodity prices, and so they've been able to sell with good pricing. Now we're seeing that farmers have built a lot of storage capacity on their farms. So a lot of bins have gone up in the last couple of years. And now farmers are simply holding on to those commodities and storing them on farm. We have programs that aren't related to the farm bill kind of nonsense that's been going on. And we can do bin loans if a farmer is interested in building new capacity on their farm. That's a 7-year fixed term loan at 2%. Which is quite good.
And this would be more even pressing if prices drop, because more and more farmers are going to want to store their corn until it's, and the commercial facilities out there are going to be full.
Sure. And so, yeah, and just even the flexibility in marketing, being able to deliver commodities at certain times of the year and get some of that better pricing. So we also, aside from the bin loan programs, and we can go up to $500,000 now, so our limits used to be a lot smaller than that. Now we have more ability to work with many different kinds of projects. If you want to do some bunker storage, traditional grain bin, silo. We're also doing commodity loans. So once you have that commodity stored, you can actually get a loan from the CCC through our office, and it's 1.1% interest. And as you sell that commodity, you pay the loan back. And right now on corn, I believe we're at $1.86 a bushel on dry shell corn that's stored. So you can borrow that, and then you don't have to pay it back until you market that commodity. So it gives you some flexibility. You can get a little bit of that money up front, pay a very low interest rate, and that gives you some more flexibility with marketing and with operating as well.
Now, if you're building something, do the loans pay for it all, or is this something that is is an incentive to make the decision more palatable in today's market? You know, you're not going to get it all, but you'll get this nice loan to pay for part of it. Is that more how it works, or do you actually end up getting a whole bin?
It's a traditional loan. We have a 15% down payment requirement. So aside from the 15%, we can finance 85% of the cost of construction, and that would include site prep, electrical work, really most of what is involved as far as putting in a bin.
How long are these loans for? Are they like 15 years? Are they like 20 years? I mean, you're going to want to make sure that, you know, during that course, this thing's insured, this thing, you know, all these other factors, because you want to make sure you're going to get your money back, too. I mean, everybody giving a loan out wants it back.
Right. So, yeah, of course, throughout the course of the loan, you have to keep insurance on the bin, and you have to have crop insurance as well. But for this program, we can do a 7-year, a 10-year, or a 12-year, and the interest rates flex depending on what term you take. If you're under $100,000, you normally will do the 7-year, and that's at 2% right now. The 10 and the 12 years are up in the middle and high 2% interest loan percentage rates, and it's still pretty attractive compared to what's going on out there. When we look what we think interest rates are going to do over the course of the next 5 or 6 years, actually looks like a pretty good deal, 2% fixed.
And it is fixed. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fluctuate. It doesn't go with the consumer price index or anything like that that's going to fluctuate it. You know your costs.
Sure.
Through the whole time.
And the commodity loan program is really great, too, because normally we would do about $1 million a year in these loans, and then farmers simply pay them back when they market their crop. And you can do it on wheat, you can do it on corn, you can do it on soybeans. This year we've had a lot more interest in it because instead of, you know, this is the time of year where you have to start paying land rents, you have to start paying for some chemical and seed bills for the next year, and it can be difficult if you're sitting on a commodity that you don't want to sell yet. It doesn't force you to sell at a low price. It gives you more flexibility. It's one of those government programs that makes a lot of sense. The interest rate is low. It provides an excellent service to farmers, and you could absolutely justify it, even in the halls of Congress.
Wow, that's saying a lot. So, again, these are programs that are separate from the Farm Bill, not going to be affected at all. Count on these being there for you.
Yep, we're going to have them for the next couple of months, and then until they tell us differently. But fortunately, yeah, even with the lapse in Farm Bill, we can't sign anyone up for CRP right now. We don't anticipate there being a direct program. We've been stopped with some of the insurance programs that we handle through the office as well. So there are a few question marks, but the commodity and the bin programs are still pretty well subscribed to locally. We've been doing a lot of good work with them in the area.
Nice to know you've got something you can write up there that you can say this will be good for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fortunate thing about our office too is we've just kept so busy because we have several years of records from the last Farm Bill, and we get so busy because this is such a high volume office that there are years worth of work in that office as far as making sure that all the files are in order, that everything's being handled and processed correctly. So it really hasn't been too much of a breather for us. In fact, the 2-week furlough ended up being kind of a pain because, again, it just came at a difficult time when normally we are working with these commodity programs and preparing to implement a new Farm Bill.
And at that point, you were still anticipating one.
Still anticipating one, hopefully by November back then. But every week we push it forward another week. So the news we have is that middle of January is when we'll see. And it's going to be exactly what we expect. That's what the projection is. More emphasis on crop insurance, less emphasis on direct payments, reductions in food assistance, really what everyone's been hearing in the news. And that's where we learn as well.
Well, that's kind of been a trend, though, hasn't it? Haven't they been going more towards the crop insurance part of it and less against, you know, having a disaster payment every time 2 drops of rain hit at the same time? You know what I mean? They keep a contingency for the biggins, but for the most part, the focus in the last few years has been to shift people into the insurance part of it.
Yeah, so even in the small amount of time that I've been with the agency, though, getting up right on my 7-year anniversary of working with USDA.
7-year itch part?
No, not too bad yet, to be honest with you. This Farm Bill is trying at times, but we've seen a lot of change. So what would happen in the past was an area would experience a drought, the governor's office would go after a disaster declaration, and then we'd have something called an ad hoc disaster program. So you would get a special pool of money to do a special program, and then you'd send dollars out into the community. So yeah, you're exactly right. The emphasis now is instead of allocating money yearly or based on whatever the disaster is, having a set program that farmers can rely upon, not that they're waiting for a congressional appropriation, that there's an actual program there that gives farmers a little bit more certainty if they're facing a terrible disaster, you know, like the wheat disaster we had a few years ago, like the dry weather conditions we had during the growing season 2 years ago. And these are, it's a good trend. It makes a lot of sense because it just, like you said, provides more uncertainty in what is a very uncertain profession.
And always has been.
Always has been.
And the insurance kind of takes a little bit of out of the government's hand as far as the payouts, because most people are getting private type insurance.
Sure. And farmers have options based on what...
It may be, you know, subsidized or backed by the government in some way if it gets to be too much, but for the most part, it's they're trying to get it into the public business sector rather than the government.
Sure. And it gives farmers more flexibility as well, so if they want to opt for revenue protection, they can go in that direction. If they want to go for, you know, just general crop protection, they can do that as well. And that's a decision that they can make on their farming operation. So it's not imposed upon them. It's just an option that they have.
But the option you need if you want any of the programs through most of the Farm Service Agency, because you rely on that as a base standard for risk, I would assume.
Right. So yeah, even our old disaster programs, when we launch a few million dollars into a county because there was a drought or because there was a disaster based on rain or hail, the difference was a lot of those programs required crop insurance purchase either before the fact or after the fact. So the trend over the last 10 years...
See, that's what I want to know about, is yeah. after the fact. Because can I get car insurance and buy it only after I have an accident? That just seems, you know, to most people to seem like, what?
Right. So, and really that's just us being proactive and encouraging farmers to protect their own farming operations. So if you don't have any crop insurance and you come in and you want to get a loan on a bin, we're going to require crop insurance, because if we put a commodity in that bin, we want to make sure that you'll be able to pay back the loan. We want to make sure that you that your farming operation is going to be stable for the entire 7, 10, or 12-year term. And crop insurance is one of those tools that that allows farmers to have a little more certainty and know that even if the worst thing that could happen to a farmer happens, which is, aside from being injured themselves, that lose a crop, that there'll be a little more certainty in their operation. So the government has facilitated that trend over the last several years in saying, look, we can do this program, but in the future it's going to require crop insurance compliance.
Now, is crop insurance, crop insurance, crop insurance? I have no, the only plants I have are in the living room that the cat chews up.
Sure.
I mean, but, you know, do you like in car insurance, you know, if you want more coverage, if you want a lower deductible, are all of these types of things into play? It isn't just one standard policy. I'm sure you must have a minimum that'll meet your requirements, but it's up to the farmer if they want more or what?
Sure. And another really great thing about being in Huron County is we have great crop insurance agents. So the way that the system works is there's an interplay between the government and the private insurance industry. So there are major commodities that you can go to a crop insurance agent and you can get insurance through. Well, there's a lot of risk with insurance. So there are some commodities that crop insurance simply won't touch. So if you were growing, not houseplants, but if you were growing...
I'm just saying, that's all I know.
Right. Something like if you wanted to plant 5 acres of tomatoes in Huron County, there wouldn't be a crop insurance policy in existence for you to go and get standard crop insurance. So you can actually come to my office, you can come to the Huron County office and talk with my staff and me, and we actually have insurance programs for crops that aren't insured by crop insurance. So the way that it's set up in America is you can go to crop insurance if you're growing wheat, corn, beans, sugar beets, alfalfa, and if you're growing turnips, strawberries, grapes, things that there aren't crop insurance policies for Huron County, you can get insurance through the federal government. And it's a flat $300 fee for insurance, which, depending on how many acres you have, is actually a pretty good deal.
And how much of a loss you can have if you're growing strawberries because you make your own jam for a business.
Sure.
And you have to go out and buy them. That might not be a bad risk to just plunk the $300 down and know you're going to get strawberries out of it.
In Huron County, there hasn't been, just because we have a lot of the more traditional commodities and crop insurance has been responsive with sugar beets and dry edible beans, we do have more people coming into the area and growing specialty crops. And I think that we'll see more of a trend in that direction as farmers branch out the next generation maybe tries to grow a different commodity. So if someone wanted to grow, you know, in some parts of the state of Michigan, Christmas trees aren't insured through crop insurance, but you can get them insured through the federal government through our office. And that's not a program that's really widely subscribed to in Huron County, but when I worked down in Virginia and we had tomatoes and pumpkins, people would come in, pay their $300, and then if they had a loss on 10 acres of pumpkins, there were sometimes people would get payments of $10,000, $11,000, $12,000 in insurance. So if farmers do want to try different commodities, they should view that risk as something that can be managed and something that the government can help with. And you might see then perhaps different generations or even some current folks trying different things that will give them a little more confidence that if it fails, they'll still be able to survive and plan again the next year.
Because, as you say, a lot of people are going into some of the more, I don't want to say obscure, but less popular type of commodities that, you know, because people are getting to this, you know, they like it locally grown, they want it, you know, close to home, and then we have farmers markets and stuff. There's all kinds of things that are going on in agriculture today that, that help precipitate this.
Well, this year I actually started growing and selling at the Port Austin Farmers Market, and it was a tremendous experience.
Okay, you get any more, you got to start paying for commercial time here.
Well, we went a couple of times, and it was great fun. But it's showing that Huron County is a diversified agricultural community. We grow a lot of traditional commodities, and we grow them very well. We market them well. We insure them well. But there are also some people that are starting kale and lettuce and fruit and grapes, and I think it's an exciting time for agriculture.
Do you have to look at the commodity itself to see, you know, the risk? Because, you know, a lot of what's done in the small patches are organic. You know, that people want to be able to say, you know, no heavy commercial fertilizers on it, because some people are looking for that. And that, to me, sounds like more of a risk.
Yeah. So, even with your regular crop insurance policies, there are adjustments that come down. So you'll have your production levels, but if you're growing organic, they'll say, okay, you're protected at the same level, but we expect your production will be 75% less. So that's how we handle organic. It just kind of, it's factored at the end of it. So it's kind of written on your policy. But the interesting thing about what's been happening over the last couple of months is, as we look at the farm bill that we would go back to, the original 1949 legislation, where I think in Congress, farmers, local folks in the area like you and me, are looking at, why were these farm programs written? What are they meant to do? What are we trying to accomplish? And that's a really good process for America to go through, because it's giving us a sense of, why are we doing this? What's important? Should we be making direct payments? Should we be helping out more with crop insurance? Should we be supporting and promoting beginning farmers, low-income farmers, different types of crops? So I think, as messy as the legislative process is, we're getting some good results on it. And basically, it's just Congress trying to respond to trends in agriculture and coming to some common ground on, what do we want our country to look like? And fortunately, you know, there's some parts of the country that are all corn and soybeans. The nice thing about being up in this area is we have that built-in diversity. We have dairy, we have dry beans, we have sugar beets, we have these other growers that are moving into the area and starting different things with greenhouse fruit production,
wineries, we have apples, we have all kinds of things going on.
It's wonderful, and hopefully what you'll see is a trend towards a Huron Countyization of the rest of the United States, where you get some more of that variety, where you get some more of that ability to be successful regardless of what the marketing conditions are. Because I was at a marketing meeting this morning that Advanced Trading was putting on, and we're looking at 2 billion bushel carryover on corn potential next year. Corn with a 3 in front of it, which we haven't seen for a few years. And I think everyone may have to get a little bit more creative with what we're doing on our farming operations to make sure that we can continue to have the success we've had over the last several years.
Appreciate you coming out and taking some time with us. If people have questions, and obviously you can't give them all the answers because you don't have the paperwork or anything to tell them, but you can at least let them know what they should be doing to protect themselves at this point, they can contact your office.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we're still doing the commodity programs. We've got the bin programs. We're gearing up for what this next farm bill will look like and looking forward to getting back into some conservation programs that we anticipate coming back. But even with the snow, there's no better place to be than Huron County.
Well, if you're growing snow.
Or for your listeners in Sanilac and Tuscola, we'll take them too.
Well, they have their own farm service agencies, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah. But that's
but there's cross-bordering here as well. I mean, you don't do people just do it at one locale, or do you, if you're on the line, do you have to go to both places?
Farmers actually can choose. So we have some folks that are, if they live slightly closer to Caro or Sandusky, even if a majority of their farmland is in Huron County, they can still do all of their business in Sanilac County. So the nice thing about technology is you can really report your crops anywhere. One day I had a fellow who was up visiting family, and he was reporting crop acres from Nebraska. So we called the Nebraska office, got the maps of his farms, and we took the certification in the office. So you can do anything anywhere in the country. That's how the agency is set up.
That's got to be almost a first for your office here, doing Nebraska certifying.
Oh, it was a big day.
One day you'll remember always.
Yep.
Well, thanks for being with us. Again, the phone number, if they need to get a hold of you to set up an appointment to find out what they need to know.
269-9549.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Craig.
Our guest today on the program has been Nathan Prill, Executive Director of the Huron County Farm Service Agency Office. We've been talking about kind of the limbo farmers are in because of the lack of a farm bill at this point, and at the first of the year, going back to the 1940s original farm bill, just to complicate matters even more. We'll, of course, keep you posted on when a farm bill is passed and all of that. Just keep it here at WLEW. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.